The Transportation Committee will come to order. Today we've got a couple presentations on the budget from the Department of Public Safety and also from Driver and Vehicle Services. First, we're going to hear from Commissioner Campion and Deputy Commissioner Elson. And Commissioner, you brought along a video for us to watch about what actually happens out there sometimes to the State Patrol. And as soon as we get a few more members here, I'd like for you to play that. But I think it's imperative that all the members see what your troops are having to go through on a daily basis.
Mr. Chair, that'd be fine. We could go over the highlights of the budget and the governor's recommendation and wait for additional members.
Excellent.
That meets your pleasure. Committee members and Mr. Chair, Michael Campion is my name. I'm the Commissioner of Public Safety. We are here to give an overview of the governor's initiative in the Transportation Department. The governor's budget recommendation for the Department of Public Safety for the 2008-2009 biennium is $605 million-plus dollars in direct appropriations. This budget consists of $205 million-plus millions of dollars from the state's general fund and $399 million from all other funds, and is a 22.3% increase from the FY 06 and 07 spending budget. The funding for DPS is comprised of 28% in trunk highway funds, 34% in state general funds, 35% in special revenue funds, and 3% from the highway user tax distribution fund. And with me also at the table is Mary Elson, Deputy Commissioner of Public Safety, and we'll go over the specifics of the governor's initiatives. Mr. Chair, members, we also have a number of other division directors here available to answer any questions that might arise during the course of the afternoon.
Thank you, Commissioner. Deputy Commissioner.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Members of the committee, for the record, my name is Mary Ellison, Deputy Commissioner of the Department of Public Safety. What I had planned on doing today was going over this one-page sheet that you should have in your packet that is entitled Minnesota Department of Public Safety Fiscal Year 08-09 Budget Priorities Transportation. And what I would do is just briefly highlight what is on this one-page summary, direct you to the page in the budget where the initiative is discussed in more detail, and then we have people here to answer specific questions depending upon where the committee would like to go with the discussion. The first item on the sheet is the Information Technology Security and Disaster Recovery. The governor is proposing $6 million for the coming biennium. The budget detail for this is located on page 13 of your budget book. It allows us to achieve the level of security recommended by an IT security assessment that we have had done. It also allows us to have needed funding to ensure services to the public in the event that we have a crisis of some kind where our systems go down. The second item is a request for increases to the capital security force. That is located on page 26 of your budget. This adds 20 security guard positions and one supervisor to address the security needs here in the Capitol complex. It also includes over $800,000 in capital equipment replacement and upgrades. The next item is State Patrol enhancements at $8.4 million for the biennium. That budget detail is located on page 25 of your budget books.
Deputy Commissioner, Senator Bonoff.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Sorry to interrupt. A question regarding the Capitol security. I've been concerned when I leave at night here. I have the most wonderful guard in the morning, and we say hello every day, and I think the world of them. And then I leave, and it's dark, and there's nobody in there. And, you know, particularly when we've had these rapes in around the Capitol area in St. Paul, I've been concerned about the lack of guards at the end of the day. Is that a funding issue?
excuse me, Mr. Chair, Senator Bonoff, yes, it is. And the increased level of security, the increase in FTEs would address completely your concerns. So, yes, it is a funding issue.
Mr. Chair, thank you. And just so you do note that is a concern for particularly, I'm sure, the women leaving the building at late in the day.
Mr. Chair.
Senator Olson.
Mr. Chair, I haven't seen any notices, Commissioner, but do you still have, you know, given that we're not all leaving at the same time, and that I don't know what the staffing hours would be required. It could be all hours. Do you still have the phone call that we can call and have an escort to our cars?
Yes.
Mm-hmm. Mr. Chair, Senator Olson, yes. Same number, same service. Hopefully there's enough people to accommodate all the requests.
Okay, thank you, especially if we're after hours. And thank you.
Deputy Commissioner, we were on page
25.
All right, thank you.
State Patrol enhancements, $8.4 million. This request is to add 40 additional state troopers to patrol Minnesota's highways. It also provides additional funding to cover the increased fuel costs that the patrol has had over the past several years. The next item is driver and vehicle records coordinator. We would like to add a position that's located on page 44 of the budget document. This is to seek additional spending authority for a records contract coordinator who would monitor compliance with state privacy statutes by users of the DPS, of the DVS data. We have many people out there that we have contracts with that use our data for various purposes. We have contracts with each of them that we need somebody to go out and actually monitor the appropriate use of that data. Mm-hmm. The next one is an increase in driver license fees to offset increased expenses. That's located on page 39 of your budget books. We are requesting the ability to add an additional 75 cents for driver's license and identification cards to maintain the current services that we have in place. The next item is to eliminate leasing company partial renewals. That's located on page 45. It allows for modification of the current program to make it a one-time option. It creates a $10 fee to cover the costs associated with operating this particular program. The next one is license plate production. The request is for $3.1 million. That's located on page 42 of the budget documents. Allows for an increase in the cost charged for license plates and license plate transfers to cover increased costs related to the production and distribution of license plates.
Now, Deputy Commissioner, all the increases in taxes that you're talking about, that's just to cover the actual cost of doing business.
Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, that's correct.
Thank you.
Let me just add there, too. You'll remember that 2 years ago, we went to a fee-based system for driver and vehicle services, and the commitment that we made was that fees would be adjusted to cover the costs of doing business. And so, like with the license plate production, if the cost of metal goes up or the cost of production goes up, then we come back and request a fee to increase the fee to cover the costs of those of those
Thank you.
Items. The next one is increase in title fee to offset increased expenses. That's, again, this a similar issue. We're asking for a title transfer fee increase of 75 cents to maintain current services. The next item is a request for $138,000. That's located on page 15 of your budget documents. That is to ensure federal, state, and local coordination for planning and security efforts related to the Republican National Convention that will be here in the Twin Cities.
Deputy Commissioner, maybe for the committee's sake, we could have a little further explanation on that. I know the commissioner went over exactly what is exactly what this $110,000 is going to get us, but I think that the rest of the committee needs to understand that.
Mr. Chair, committee members, the estimates range from somewhere between 150 and 160,000 people might attend Minneapolis-St. Paul and or the regional area during the Republican National Convention. The demand for security alone will be something that we've never experienced here in Minnesota before. We've done those kinds of things before here collectively as a law enforcement or a public safety community, but never at this grand a scale. There might be 20,000 news media, for instance, that may come here. These statistics
Let's
are based,
hope not.
These statistics, Mr. Chair, are based on what happened in Boston during the Democratic National Convention and New York City, which was the location of a different convention. I don't know which was Republican or Democrat. I don't know. Mm-hmm. But we have sent people to both of those locations. We have excuse me, worked with Minneapolis-St. Paul Police Department. By federal presidential order signed by President Clinton, the Secret Service is the lead federal agency. The FBI has a secondary role in the event there's any incidents that require a law enforcement, particularly a federal law enforcement response. We may need somewhere around 4,000 or 5,000 police officers, for instance, and I think we have maybe 10,000 in the entire state. So it'll be a tremendous chore to get prepared and to coordinate all of the federal, state, county, city, law enforcement, public safety entities into a situation where we'll provide for the safe environment for any of those people that comes. It was our belief that instead of pulling people from agencies within public safety to sit on these various committees, and there's going to be 19 or 20 subcommittees alone that we will have to have representation on, if we had one individual that could devote their full attention to this particular project, we would be more efficient, more effective, and we would have a better coordinated effort. Mm-hmm. And that's the basis, Mr. Chair, members, for the request.
Mm-hmm. Well, thank you, Commissioner. And you know, we all want, even we Democrats, want this to come off without a hitch because, you know, this is important to our state. I mean, this is kind of put us in the limelight and, you know, the response from, you know, and the efforts that that law enforcement put towards this are going to be well rewarded for the whole state. It's my understanding that that this coordinator is just going to coordinate all these activities that are happening all across the spectrum, but they're still going to be responsible to, and you said, the Secret Service.
Mr. Chair, members, yes. But primarily this individual, and we already hired an individual to do this part-time now, will coordinate the state response. There will be certainly Department of Transportation, Department of Agriculture, Department of Health will all have a piece of this or will contribute or participate in the preparation leading up to the conference. Mm-hmm. There will be multifacets to this Department of Agriculture. I mean, there will be a lot of the state resource, the National Guard, Department of Corrections, Department of Natural Resources, all will be participants in the preparation for this conference or convention.
Well, we look forward to it. Senator Watt.
Mr. Chair, it's my understanding that the kind of preparation that we would be doing wouldn't matter which national convention came to St. Paul, that we would be putting the same kind of state as well as federal effort behind whichever convention comes. And so I think that it is really good to have an event come to our city and our state because it will have tremendous impact on showcasing us as a regional center. But in terms of the security, I'm just a little bit confused, and maybe, Commissioner, you can clear up for me. I thought that as part of the negotiation for the convention coming to St. Paul, that it was agreed in the contracts that St. Paul and the St. Paul police officers will be the coordinator of all public safety issues with the other entities, and that I thought that was a critical part because of the contract, because we had some concerns about various things in St. Paul that had to be accounted for, and it sounds like it's now different because this person is going to be that coordinator. Am I misunderstanding something here?
Mr. Chair, Senator, in a sense you are. I said that this person would coordinate all the state resources and state assets. Certainly St. Paul Police Department and the City of St. Paul will have the primary local responsibility. Again, the federal government designates the Secret Service as the primary agency. We just had a briefing again this morning in the governor's office, and it is a collaboration of literally everyone who is available to contribute to this. St. Paul Police Department is the fiscal agent. The mayor of St. Paul signed a contract with the Republican National Convention or Committee, I believe, already a week ago or so. So there's a lot of dynamics at work, but St. Paul really will have the thrust of the responsibility locally to set up because they have the most police officers. St. Paul and Ramsey County, of course, because it's in their venue. But literally every other department probably in the state, almost, will be contributing law enforcement officers. But this individual will just coordinate the state's role in the state assets and make sure that all of the state assets are available to the Secret Service and the City of St. Paul for their assistance in preparing for this convention.
Mr. Chair, I'll check on something and come back to you, but it was my understanding that, and maybe this is, there are two separate plans going on here, but that because the City of St. Paul is going to be in charge of coordinating all the security with respect to the convention, that I think with in conjunction with the governor's office, there was going to be an appropriation to the City of St. Paul to do the public safety coordination. And maybe I'm mistaken, but I want to double check on that so that we can get the information to the committee.
Mr. Chair, Senator, if I could maybe help. I believe that there's a $50 million federal earmark designed to go to the City of St. Paul for security enhancements and security overtime for officers and whatever else might be required for the convention. And again, St. Paul, the City of St. Paul, my understanding pretty clearly, and I think I'm correct on this, will be the fiscal agent, will be responsible for that federal earmark whenever it arrives. So again, there's a number of dynamics at work here. This individual will coordinate the state resources, right. The state patrol, the Bureau of Criminal Apprehension, and all of the other state entities, so that we have a coordinated effort to assist St. Paul.
And so, Mr. Chair and Commissioner, so if there isn't a separate governor's recommendation outside of this position that will go towards the coordination of public safety in the state that's coming from the governor's office in terms of his recommendation?
Mr. Chair, Senator, I believe this is the only one that I'm aware of, unless something else develops. But we're relying on the federal government. And that is consistent, Senator, with other conventions in the past. Again, I mentioned Boston, New York. That's what has taken place in anticipation of those conventions occurring.
Well, Mr. Chair, I'll check. I understand that the negotiations for this convention, I mean, each convention gets negotiated differently in terms of the details and how it gets taken care of. So I'll check, and I'll make sure that the committee gets the information. That very well may be the case.
Well, thank you. Like I said earlier, we just want this to come off without a hitch, and everybody will be real happy. Deputy Commissioner.
The next item is the federal match increase request of $222,000. That detail is located on page 57 of the budget document. What we're requesting here is an addition to the state match funds for the Office of Traffic Safety for administration of National Highway Traffic Safety Administration funds. The next item is a request for a special revenue increasing the cap. That's located on page 62 of your budget document. This is for our Office of Pipeline Safety. The proposal is to increase the spending cap on special revenue funds collected through fees charged to pipeline companies operating in Minnesota. It enables the Office of Pipeline Safety to fully utilize available federal funds and increase inspection efforts. There are five major pipeline projects which are planned for the coming biennium. The compensation adjustment, as we talked about, I believe the last time we were here with our overview, this request of $11.3 million is located throughout the budget document. So you'll see the compensation requests related to each different division within the transportation budget. We've had to, state agencies over the past 4 years have not received salary supplements, and so as unions have negotiated salary increases and contracts have been settled, state agencies have had to pay for those salary and benefit increases through existing budgets. So what we're requesting here is the ability to get $11.3 million to fully fund the full-time positions that we currently have. And this means for us that we would not lose 86 full-time state employees in the next biennium, 82 of which are located in the Minnesota State Patrol. Final item is the gas theft reinstatement fee. That's located on page 39 of the budget. It's a small item. It would raise about $11,000. It's a reinstatement fee of $20 for driver's license suspensions due to conviction for theft of gasoline at the pump. This is the only suspension where a reinstatement fee currently isn't charged. That really is the highlight of the budget change items that we're requesting. There are people here in the audience, as I mentioned, that can provide detail on each one of these items as the committee would wish.
Mr. Chair.
Senator Langseth.
Mr. Chair, I see one after the other fee increases here. And, of course, the explanation they're made is why they're needed. But I'm kind of wondering why the gas tax, was this a fee, is treated so much differently than all these other fees. When I go to the gas pump and pay my tax, I go right on in the street and I'm using it right away. It's a fee for service. And I guess I don't understand the difference in the governor recommending all these small fee increases and not in saying he would veto a fee increase for highways. That probably isn't your deal. But
Mr. Chair, Senator Langseth, if I just could point out, though, that 2 years ago the request was made to the legislature to change the driver vehicle services budget from money that comes from the Trunk Highway Fund to money that comes from as a result of generating fees. So the driver vehicle services raises about $1.5 billion worth of fees, and mm-hmm. that goes into the Trunk Highway Fund. And basically what we proposed to the legislature and to the governor's office 2 years ago is that we would try to run driver and vehicle services based on the cost of doing business. And so we would be coming back from time to time to request fee adjustments based on the cost of doing business. So if the mm-hmm. license plate production costs go up or whatever would happen, we would be able to come back and ask for a fee increase. So I understand the question, and I know it goes a lot deeper than what I'm able to comment on, but just in fairness, mm-hmm. I just wanted to point out that we did come forward with that recommendation 2 years ago to be a fee-based operation, and that was approved by the legislature.
Mm-hmm. Mr. Chairman?
Senator Olson.
Mr. Chairman, you said that was approved, so in fact you are fee-based as a whole department?
Mr. Chair, Senator Olson, mm-hmm. just within the Driver and Vehicle Services Division.
Okay.
Yeah, Senator Olson, that was a provision that I'd worked on with Ms. McCormick and several others, a deputy commissioner, and it was a fine balancing act. A lot of people didn't like those, what, you know, people want to call them fees, but, you know, they're tax increases. But it's appropriate because you're spending the money to run that department, whether it's issuing driver's license or new plates or whatever it might be. I believe that's an appropriate use of the money. I think Senator Langseth's question is probably not so much with DVS, but more with the State Patrol. We've traditionally funded our troopers out of our Trunk Highway Fund. A couple years ago, Senator Arata, myself, and a few others tried to disconnect some of these, Senator Arata called them constitutional issues. I just thought it made more sense that if we had the gas tax going strictly for pavement and bridges and things that we can actually touch instead of, you know, buying more State Patrol, that we would be in a better position to use more general fund money and other sources of revenue to get even more troopers on the road, because we all know that without an increase in the gas tax this year, it's going to be difficult, if not impossible, to keep this commitment, this extra, I believe it's $1.5 million, Commissioner, for the new troopers that we're bringing on.
Mr. Chair, it's more than that. It's
maybe I have my decimal point in the wrong spot. Maybe it's 11.5?
8.4.
So it's going to be difficult to keep all those folks on and make sure that they're being paid appropriately. I mean, we just heard about all the people in these departments that have went a long time without seeing any increase in pay. In the private world, that doesn't happen. People normally leave if they don't get a pay increase from time to time. What DVS has done is just something that Senator Arata and myself had asked earlier, that we start separating the connection between the gas tax and some of the things that driver and vehicle services provide.
Well, Mr. Chairman, I agree with you. I agree. If before that, the fees, all those various fees were actually going into the highway user fund, and then you were being paid for out of that. I think that is much better, cleaner to have that outside of. I don't think that has to do with highways. And I'm in agreement with you on the highway mm-hmm. patrol as well, if there's a way of doing it.
The earth didn't quit spinning. We agree.
Isn't that amazing? We'll put that in the bank because I suspect there might be an occasion or two where we might disagree.
Yeah. That could be. We better save that one and let it draw interest for a while. So, thank you. Deputy Commissioner, please.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, we're here to—I highlighted the different change items, and so then, depending upon the questions you have or where you want to go today, we're here to answer your questions related to each one of those change items or any aspects of the budget.
Mm-hmm. Members, I would ask that you turn to page 29 of your playbook here, and about a third of the way down, it talks about key performance measures. There's a performance indicator starting in 1994 with a percentage of motor vehicle occupants that use seat belts. And so you can see where we're at today. Actually, the 2006 number is about 82 or 83%, so we dropped a little bit there. But the one I want you to pay attention to is the next one down. It's the DWIs. And, you know, we passed some pretty aggressive laws back in 02 and 03, and since then, 04, we had 5,891 arrests for DWI, and 05, we had 7,036. We're not making a dent, so I think we need to back up and take another run at this. I think everybody here knows what my preference is. After the third DWI, you get to sit in jail for a year and think about it. Other countries don't allow this to go on in their roads. They have very few people killed by drunk drivers. And right now, a quarter of all of our fatalities are a direct result of somebody who was drunk and out on the roads. About 50% of all the vehicle crashes out there, alcohol is involved in some way. Maybe the driver wasn't intoxicated, but somebody in the car probably was they were imbibing too much. So,
Mr. Chairman?
Senator Olson.
Mr. Chairman, you know, we abolished all of the farms that used to be a part of this, and maybe you don't necessarily need the level of security that you have in corrections in the jails or in prisons mm-hmm. for this, but maybe there should be just a unique opportunity for mm-hmm. folks that go through this, and I agree with you.
Great, Senator Olson. I'm glad to hear that.
Something else to go
into. Because I've got a dime a drink tax that you would be interested in being a co-author on because we will clean up this mess. So, Commissioner, would you want to play? Would you want to play the video now? We'll have Bo run around and set it up there. But folks, we need to watch this. The State Patrol came to the office today, Chief Donansky, and said, "You got to see this. This is what the State Patrol goes through every day." And Chief, if you want to provide a little commentary here, I'd appreciate it.
Mr. Chair, members, for the record, my name is Mark Donansky. I'm Chief of your Minnesota State Patrol. The video that you're going to see was taken about a week and a half ago. It's Trooper Jonathan Ferris on patrol in the southern portion of the metropolitan area, been called to a crash on a day very similar to today, as a matter of fact. And the video that you're going to see is from the dash cam or from the camera that we have mounted in the majority of our squad cars. You want to go ahead and play it. Jonathan's been called to a minor crash on the shoulder of the highway. He's pulled up and parked his car to protect the scene as best he can, as most of the troopers are trained to do. The trooper walking up, and I was very proud to see that, in fact, he did have his hat on. He waved to a person down in the ditch. There was another person down there verifying that that individual was not injured.
Oh!
As you can tell, when you're standing out on the highway and vehicles are traveling past you at 65 or 70 miles per hour, there's not a lot of time to react, not a lot of time to think about what's going on, even if you're paying very close attention to what's going on. As a matter of fact, in today, I just have the statistics as we came up here this morning. The Minnesota State Patrol in the 7th County Metropolitan Area responded to nearly 250 property damage crashes, 28 personal injury crashes, 40 vehicles off the road, and 47 stalls. Three of our cruisers have been hit, one twice, just this morning. And so while a lot of people think about your men and women in maroon out doing rather boring, tedious jobs, on a daily basis. Believe it or not, they're actually risking their lives, as I said before in the meeting last time. We were on 2,000 pounds of vehicle come sailing by you at a pretty fast rate. Jonathan is doing very well. He broke his arm, broke his elbow, and he's off work for a little while, but he's going to make a full recovery, as much as a recovery can be. One of the things that I'm like to tell folks is that the troopers that are out there, by and large, get hit the number of times. In any given year, we probably have 25 to 50 squad cars hit just in a situation like this, hit alongside the shoulder. In a lot of cases, the troopers are actually still in the squad cars. Not uncommon for us to have troopers that have been hit anywhere from 10 to 20 times over the course of their career. The number one workers' comp complaint that we have, the number one cause of worker comp compensation for us, is lower back problems, neck injuries. A lot of the troopers have been hit several times, and it comes home after a number of years.
Mm-hmm. And
Mr. Chairman?
And Chief, the other the two passengers that were standing out there, their conditions?
They were treated and released. They all received minor injuries. It's very fortunate, several feet one way or the other, and it could have been quite a tragedy. But, again, another one of those situations where everything's happened to work out okay.
Mr. Chairman?
Senator Olson.
Mr. Chairman, in situations like that, are the patrol officers wearing seatbelts or not?
Mr. Chair, members, as a matter of fact, I can say without a doubt that every state trooper in the state of Minnesota wears seatbelts.
Okay.
Mr. Chair?
Senator Olson.
You alluded to earlier about third drunk driving, spending some jail time. Is the person that caused this accident, blatantly speeding in adverse conditions, do they face charges for that, or is it just considered an accident?
Mm-hmm. Mr. Chair, members, we don't even call them accidents. They're crashes. And by and large, most of the crashes are caused by either momentary lapses in judgment or careless or inattentive driving. In this case, the driver, I believe, is going to be charged or was charged.
A follow-up?
Senator Olson.
I had a friend who was a trooper, and he had developed a technique of parking his car because on 35 there's been a number of troopers injured seriously in these kinds of things, and he kind of parked his car so that the car would absorb. Did you teach that as a procedure, or was he just kind of doing his own thing there?
Mr. Chair, members, no, as a matter of fact, all of our troopers go through significant training, and as a matter of fact, we're working in conjunction with many of the fire services, the ambulance services, and the tow truck companies on what we refer to as work zone safety. When this trooper pulled up to this crash, this now became this individual's work zone. And so we talk about how we position our cars, how we set up vehicles, whether there's a fire truck or an ambulance or anybody else that happens to be coming to it, in such a fashion that it's going to protect them. And you're absolutely right. As a matter of fact, you saw the trooper walk up to the right side of the vehicle. We've changed our policy, by and large, from walking even up on the left side of the car, even during normal traffic stops. So we put that trooper on the other side of the vehicle because it's far safer. Had that individual been on the left side of the vehicle, the consequences would have been much graver.
Thanks, Chief. Senator Carlson.
I have a question, Mr. Chair and Chief. I see a greater frequency of driver stops where the driver is stopping on the left side of a two-lane road. Is there anything that's going on here that's caused that, and do the troopers tend to ask the drivers to pull over to the right side? It seems like we're more frequently on the fast side of the road.
Mr. Chair, members, being stopped by an officer, whether it's a state trooper or any other law enforcement officer, can be kind of a traumatic experience. And there's a lot of people that as soon as they see the lights and the siren, they panic, and the first thing they want to do is pull over. They're genuinely trying to obey the law. They want to get out of the way because they don't know that it's them. And particularly in a situation that you're talking about, a controlled access highway, two lanes in one direction, if you're in the left lane, you see the lights, the first thing you can think of is, I've got to get out of the way. And they typically will sometimes pull over to the left. In doing so, they do cause a kind of a hazard, but the trooper or the officer will normally evaluate the traffic flow and may feel that it's actually safer just to continue to stop on the left side of the road than it is to try and instruct the individual to move to the right. I can tell you from personal experience, trying to get on the speaker and telling the individual to pull across two lanes of 70-mile-an-hour traffic onto the right shoulder can be rather problematic. And at that point, we actually cause more of a problem than we intended to cause when we made the initial stop. So I think that it's just a consequence of more people really trying to get out of the way of law enforcement officers.
Mr. Chairman.
Senator Rust.
I thought that if there's a white line down the left side or in the two-lane one direction, that you're and there's an emergency vehicle coming behind you, that you are supposed to cross that white line. I don't mean somebody coming after you, but you're supposed to cross that white line and move into whatever shoulder that's there so that the emergency vehicle can get by rather than all the traffic moving to the right. I thought we made a law change or a rule change to do that. Am I not understanding that correctly?
Mr. Chair, members, no, you are correct, and that is the intent. And that's why once the individual moves over, in many cases, the citizen just doesn't know that they're being stopped by the officer, and so the intention is to get out of the way of the emergency vehicle. But once you're over and you're slowed down, now it's kind of a traffic situation, it's kind of a hazard, and by all means, we would like to be on the right side of the road, but in some cases, as the senator pointed out, it's just as easy for us to make the stop on the left side and stay over there.
But otherwise, Mr. Chairman, otherwise, when someone is just emergency vehicle is going through, the traffic is supposed to get out of the way, not everybody move to the right.
Mr. Chair, members, that is correct.
Okay. Well, no further questions. Thanks, Chief.
Thank you,
Commissioner, Deputy Commissioner.
Mr. Chair, thank you for the opportunity.
Oh, you're more than welcome. Thanks. Next up, I think Ms. McCormick in the Driver and Vehicle Services. So now we're going to hear Ms. McCormick's explanation on why all these good increases are necessary.
Good afternoon, Mr. Chair and members of the committee. For the record, my name is Pat McCormick, and I'm the Director of Driver and Vehicle Services. And as Deputy Commissioner Ellison said, we are asking for an increase in a few of the fees that we collect in order to continue our operations and pay for the costs associated with those operations. And so in terms of driver's licenses, we're requesting a 75-cent increase, and that increase pays for the salary adjustment, because unlike the other divisions within the department, we have to raise our own, because we are under a fee-based budget, we have to raise our own revenue in order to pay for our salaries. It's not coming out of the trunk highway fund. And so that would pay for the same increase that's being proposed for other state employees, for our employees. That would pay for our 95 exam stations that are open throughout the state, because there are leasing costs associated with all of those offices except for the metro exam stations. Those three exam centers are paid for outside of there, but the rest have leasing costs involved. And it would also pay for the document management system that we need in order to be able to scan and image all the documents that we need in order for driving records, for any enforcement purposes, for court certification of records. All those things would be necessary, or make this 75-cent increase necessary on the driver's side of our operation. On the vehicle side, we are also asking for a 75-cent increase in titles and duplicate titles in that fee. And the purpose for that is similar: to pay for our staff, to pay for document management that's needed. We're in the process of transitioning from paper documents, title document applications, to scanning and imaging, and right now we have over 5 million documents that need to be scanned for that very purpose, so that we have those images readily available for our use and for our deputy registrar agent's use, as well as for the processing that we're doing at our 173 deputy registrar locations in terms of having the an electronic registration process that we're working on with the dealers and the deputy registrars and a private vendor. We're hopeful that that may be available by the summer or fall of this year. We also have implemented an expedited title and driver license process that we have hired staff to help us with, and that has been very successful. We have been able to use that money to be able to get documents where people need them right away. We've been able to get titles and driver's licenses to customers within the 3 days that the legislation that you passed last session provides for, and that's been well received by all those involved. And we also need the resources in order to be able to keep up with the volume for titles, because we do enter over a million, I think it's 1.4 million titles per year. And so the volume is increases, and there is overtime costs that are associated with trying to maintain a 14-day turnaround. And I think I mentioned when we met 2 weeks ago that while we haven't always met the 14-day turnaround, we have tried to stay very close to that. I think we've gone up to 20 days, to 21 days maybe. But in general, it was at 60 days well over a year ago, and we have been able to try to maintain that two-week turnaround time. And we cannot do it during our busiest months without having overtime while we're working on some of these electronic procedures that we need in order to be able to issue the titles more quickly. In terms of license plate production, license plate fees haven't been raised since, I think they were raised in 2001 or 2002. Right now, it costs the department or the division, it costs us 82 cents more than what we're collecting for the price of plates. We do have that, we are able to use that open appropriation that was established in 2001, which allows a certain amount of money to be in the appropriation to pay for those costs. But because we are in a fee-based system, we believe we should be charging our customers the actual costs associated with it. So we would be increasing the fees for plates, and we would be still staying within the what we believe is an acceptable margin, considering that right now we're paying over $5 a plate, and we would be increasing the set of plates to $6. So we believe if we increase it at this particular time, we won't have to increase it again for at least a few years. The price of steel has been the part that's been the most difficult, and also the staffing involved and the transportation costs, because as you know, we work with MinCor to produce our plates, and there are transportation costs associated with transporting them to our deputy registrar offices throughout the state. So those are the big cost drivers in that particular process. In terms of the driver license and motor vehicle data coordinator, that position we're asking for additional expenditure authority for. That particular position we believe is necessary. Right now, our staff are really being stretched very thin in order to find enough time to be keeping up to date with ensuring that the people that we sell motor vehicle and data and driver's license data to are using it appropriately. Our contracts that we have been having these data users sign require them to audit their to provide us with an audit of who they are selling that data to, but we have to have someone to be able to coordinate that, review that information. Right now, the person who oversees that area is doing it in addition to managing our document management program, overseeing purchasing and contracting, as well as mail services, and as well as all the things to do with records. And so we believe that it's very important that we have a position that can handle just this particular process. And that's why we're asking for the additional expenditure authority. The department has the authority to raise our fees to pay for our costs, but we'd need to have the authority to spend any increase that we got in raising our fees. We haven't raised our fees for the monthly updates we provide to several users of our data since 1995, And so we believe that the time has come to reassess those costs and to raise those fees. But we would still need the expenditure authority in order to be able to hire a position for this job.
Mm-hmm. Ms. McCormick, we got a couple questions. Senator Fischbach and Senator Olson.
Mr. Chair, Director McCormick, have you considered, kind of going back to the license plates issue, have you considered looking for statutory language that would just allow you to ask, charge the cost of the plates so that you could adjust when that cost changed? You don't have to come back here and ask for an increase?
Ms. McCormick.
Mr. Chair and Senator Fischbach, I don't think we've specifically looked at that. Certainly that's kind of the way we're operating our division, and that might be something that we could look at. I still think that it would be, we would still probably need to have some language that would offer notice to the public that we might be making those price changes. So I guess I just need some time to think about how we could do that or what the language would look like, because I
right.
think most of our state residents would want some notice if we decided we were going to be raising the cost of the plates.
And Senator Fischbach, that comes back to that issue. We had a hard time trying to get this the first time because there was kind of an open appropriation. We normally don't do that any place in state government. And it was, there were a lot of teeth pulled to get that through, and I still haven't paid my dentist bill. So let's take it easy on the open appropriations. Senator Olson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Mr. Gorman, I frequently get calls or contacts asking me why we require plates on the front of vehicles. What about instead of raising the price, leaving it where it is and eliminating the front plate? It would cut your costs. You'd actually have more money to work with.
Yes.
What would what's the barrier to that? And I don't know. Do you know how many states have eliminated the front plate? It's the rear one that you use for the apprehension and those kinds of things, so I'm not sure what value it has.
Mr. Chair and Senator Olson, law enforcement has made it explicitly clear to us that they would oppose removing the front plate. They believe that they need the front and the back plate in order to properly enforce motor vehicle regulations, and I could let State Patrol talk about it if they would like. But in terms of the costs, surprisingly, it isn't a dramatic cost saver to only issue one plate versus two plates. And I don't have those figures, but I can get that information for you, because it doesn't dramatically save on the cost of producing plates.
But, Mr. Chair,
Senator Olson.
Mr. McCormick, you said with the cost of steel going up, there is certainly a cost factor. Maybe it wouldn't cut it in half, but it would certainly, I would think, reduce it. But I would be interested in hearing what the rationale is against that move.
Mr. Chair and Senator Olson, certainly I'll be glad to provide that to you and the other members of the committee.
Mm-hmm. The finance end and...
Right.
When we hear Senator Day's bill, we'll have Chief Donansky come up and give a full explanation as to...
Have you got a bill on it?
Mr. Chairman,
Senator Day.
Twice, starting 14 years ago, I have done that, but no, I'm not headed that direction anymore. I find it hard to believe why Minnesota needs two license plates and most states don't, but there's probably a difference between the police chief and St. Paul and... Miami, because they probably catch more people in St. Paul, so I don't know. But anyway, I'm not headed there again, so.
Oh, okay. Well, maybe we won't need the chief to come and testify on that bill. Senator Olson, or as
Mr. Chairman, I haven't got the question answered, so I'd love to hear the...
Well, Chief, why don't you come on up here, and you can... And Senator Moi, if you... Okay. Chief.
Mr. Chair, members, the question being, would you repeat it for him, please?
Why do we need two plates instead of just having one on the back of the vehicle?
Why have the front plate?
Mr. Chair, members, with all regard to the costs associated with it, from the law enforcement perspective, any time that we have the ability to identify a vehicle from different angles, it adds to our ability to recognize and to basically to identify the vehicle and possibly the individual that's driving it. There's many times that I know that the thought being that we're following somebody, and so we're looking at a rear plate all the time. Believe it or not, there's many times when we're actually looking at vehicles coming up behind us and looking at the plates in a rearview mirror. There's many times when a vehicle has gone into the ditch and it's spun around a different direction, and having a front plate allows us to readily identify that vehicle based on that plate. So from a law enforcement perspective, anytime that we have the ability to better identify a vehicle by whatever means it is, it's beneficial to us.
Okay, thank you.
Senator Moore.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Ms. McCormick, I have a couple questions with respect to the increase in the driver license fees and then the increase in the title fee. And I just want to make sure I'm getting it correct. You indicated that the fee increase is going to be used to offset staff pay increases and some data functions. Can you split that up to see of the $2.7 million, of the $1.6 million, how much of that is going to go towards staffing, pay raises, and then how much of it is going to go towards data, the photocopying and the data management piece of it?
Ms. McCormick.
Mr. Chair and Senator Moi, yeah, I can provide you with more information. I don't have it right here, but I can at least give you, it would be what the staffing costs are, and then in terms of our operational costs, it wouldn't just be document management. There's leasing costs. We try to allow for a 3% lease increase over the biennium so that we are able to pay for all the costs for the exam stations that we have throughout the state. And so those are part of the costs as well as document management, and I can provide more detail. I don't have it available right now, but I'll be glad to provide that to you.
Ms. McCormick, so this is just maintaining the current operations that we're doing without adding anything on top of it?
Mr. Chair and Senator Moi, yes, that's correct.
Well, Mr. Chair, this sounds to me like it's inflationary costs that we've been kind of talking about that. And anyways.
Senator Moore brings up a good point. I mean, the cost of doing business goes up all the time, and I think that and in Ms. McCormick's defense, I mean, they've got 5 million documents that need to be processed. And that's on top of the, what is it, 1.4 or 6 that you already process on a yearly basis. That huge backlog was, it was caused for, it was several different things. I mean, it was some technological glitches and what I would term as chronic underfunding of the services that you provide. Once we went to the fee-based system, I think the funding issue didn't entirely go away, but it improved. And now, the rising cost of doing business, I mean, we're back here looking for, and these are just very modest increases. I mean, this isn't going to drive somebody to the poorhouse, but it is going to provide the service that people want. You know, when you go and get your picture taken for a driver's license, you want to get that driver's license back in a reasonable period of time. And I think that Ms. McCormick and the working with the deputy registers all across the state do an excellent job of making sure that that happens. Processing a lot of these documents, especially title documents, are not as easy as some people think. And that's why we charge. There's different rates for different types of procedures. Different services that Ms. McCormick's staff and our deputy registers provide on a daily basis. That's why you see some of the fees are as much as $7 or $8, and some of them for a driver's license is $350, I believe, for a driver's license, a renewal of a driver's license.
Fee.
Right. Mm-hmm. So there's all these fees out there, and they're different scales, but they're meant to actually reflect what the cost is to produce that document. Ms. McCormick, I do have, the issue with the Real ID system has, reared its ugly head, and there's been other states that have tried to back away from that. members, this is something that could eat up our entire budget. Ms. McCormick, could you talk about what the federal real ID system is, the potential of millions of dollars being squandered to produce a document that's no more secure than what we currently have?
Yes, Mr. Chair, but first, if you don't mind, I would like to address the question Senator Moi mentioned before, and then I'll be glad, because Deputy Commissioner Ellison reminded me that in our budget proposal, we did talk about the fact that over 67% of the revenue we collect pay for the salaries of our 512 employees, and 33% pays for operations. So that is what the breakdown is between operations and salaries. So I'm sorry, I forgot that we had that in there. But
thank you.
Yes, Senator Murphy, in terms of what the costs would be for Minnesota, the one-time costs would be $10.3 million, and the ongoing costs we've estimated to be $21.23 million over 5 years, which amounts to about $14.5 million the first year and $4.2 million for the next 4 years, because there's a five-year period where you can implement the Real ID Act if that moves forward on the current deadline it's on.
Ms. McCormick, another question in regard to there. There's been other states that maybe you can talk about some of the experiences that the other states have started or the processes by which they remove themselves from this.
Mr. Chair and members of the committee, I did email each of you yesterday a chart we put together with various state actions, and there have been some states that have basically said that they will comply with the Real ID Act, and that has been action that their legislatures have taken. There have been six states that have legislation in process that would either send a resolution to Congress and the President saying that they want the Real ID Act repealed. And there's been five states that have said that they would need to they would need funding from the federal government before they would implement the Real ID Act. So that has been going on, and I think the one state that has passed it was in Maine. I think they're the one state that has passed the legislation. The others are in process.
All right. Senator Dibble.
Thanks, Bishop. I don't know if anyone's mentioned yet, but NCSL has also taken a position, a similar position to the one that Deputy Commissioner just described.
She described three. Which one? Do
well,
we withdraw?
Well, I think it's either rescind it or give us the money to
right. And Ms. McCormick, I think Senator Moi is working on some legislation that goes down that path, and I'm sure you're going to be getting a call to get all the numbers worked out in details. So. Just my opinion, we have a very secure document as far as a driver's license goes. Probably one of the more secure in the United States. You know, we use a mix of just good old homespun common sense and a lot of technology, and we've got a pretty secure document. And boy, I don't see any reason, you know, to throw it right out the window. So. Senator Olsen.
Mr. Chair, thanks. One of my concerns is that people with suspended driver's license shop around to buy cars that have just had the tabs updated, or so they have, you know, 11 or 12 months left on the tabs, and then they don't transfer the title. Is there any way you can go after that?
Look over to our expert and just...
Mr. Chairman, my name is Joseph Bowler. Mr. Chairman, Senator Olsen, we currently have a statute on the books that requires any private party who is selling a motor vehicle to report to us the person who they have sold the vehicle to. So that then information is updated into our database even before the transfer is done. And so that when that transfer is not done, in those instances where the people are trying to avoid the detection of the sale, we still know who has the vehicle, and if they don't do the transfer within a 14-day period of time, we do suspend the registration on that motor vehicle. So that then if that person is subsequently stopped on the roads by law enforcement, they know that the person driving the vehicle has never transferred it into their name. Mm-hmm. If they buy it from a car dealership, a licensed motor vehicle dealer in the state of Minnesota, that dealer is required by law to transfer the title within 10 working days. So in that case, we do know that those transfers do get done.
Mm-hmm. I'm glad to hear that.
Mm-hmm. Senator Bonner.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Ms. McCormick, is there no plans to increase in the governor's budget the TAB renewal fees?
Ms. McCormick.
Mr. Chair and Senator Bonhoff, no, these are the increases that we're proposing.
Just a comment on that. I had to pay the TAB fees for both my daughter, who she bought a used, you know, very inexpensive car. Hers came due at the same time that my husband's came due, and he's driving a fairly new, you know, SUV. And the difference between the two is $15, and it seemed to me like we were leaving some money on the table there.
Mr. Chairman? On that point?
Senator Olson, on that point.
Yeah, Mr. Chairman, how does that work if you are operating on fees covering costs? The registration fees essentially by Constitution go into the motor vehicle or the highway trust fund. How is there a division? Is there a set-aside of the cost? Is that like the $3.50 that are on there that covers your cost and the rest of whatever that decision is would go into the other fund?
Mr. Chair and Senator Olson, yes, our filing fee is the part that is kept either by the division if it's an online or mail transaction, and or that's what goes to the deputy registrar for the TAB renewal registration process.
So, Mr. Chairman, that fee actually covers your processing costs for TABs then?
Mr. Chair and Senator Olson, that fee was, yes, we did, when we came, made our request at the last biennium when we became a fee-based budget, asked for the authority to have a fee-based budget, we did a value chain analysis and we looked at what the costs are that would be part of that process in order to determine what the proper filing fee would be for paying for our services.
Thank you.
We've got Senator Skoy, Larson, and Carlson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And I think Senator Moore addressed the point that I had. And as I'm sitting here listening to this discussion, it sounds like a whole lot of inflationary adjustments. And we're, increasing the fees that pay for those. But I don't know if we shouldn't be addressing the inflation issues in a different way, and because inflation is going to occur ongoing into the future, and you did say that the 75 cents will be good for a couple years anyway, but that was just a comment that I was going to have, and I think Senator Moore kind of made it before I was there.
Thank you. Senator Larson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Is it Mr. Bowler?
Bowler.
Bowler. Yes. Mr. Bowler, back to the salvage or to the selling of a vehicle provision, the 14 days. Is that also the case when someone is transferring a title to a salvage yard or is essentially junking the car? Does that provision work for that as well, where the seller is protected with a 14-day period where that license is then inactivated?
Mr. Chairman, Senator Larson, when an individual junks a vehicle out, the current law is that junking company, whatever case may be, are to require them to report back to our division that they have taken that vehicle and have parted it out. If it's a vehicle that is 10 years old or less, that company is supposed to return the title to us at present. If it's older than 10 years, they just need to report to us that they have taken that vehicle. And we update our records to indicate that vehicle has been junked out. We also will accept those reports from an individual. If you were to junk out your car, rather than wait for that company to do so, you can inform us that you have junked that vehicle out, and we will update the record indicating that that vehicle has been junked.
Okay. Thank you.
Senator Carlson.
Yeah. Mr. Chair and Director McCormick, there's a question I have on commercial plates. I've been told that commercial plates now have a delay in issuance. When, for instance, a trucker will buy a new tractor, they get the title for it, they get the paper, the transfer paper, but then the plate is not issued. And this owner has told me that they've now been told that it's going to be 10 to 14 days before a plate is issued, and they can't haul any loads until that plate is issued. And the reason that's been given is that there's some federal mandate or some federal issue that needs to be settled. And this is actually very costly to them because they've already purchased the truck and it now needs to sit until they get a commercial plate. Is that the case, that it's a federal issue?
Mr. Chair and Senator Carlson, I'm very familiar with the case you're talking about with your constituent because your aide called me about it yesterday and we're investigating it right now. That doesn't appear to be the case from what we're learning about that, about your constituent's case. And our prorate unit manager has a call into your staff member to get some more information. It appears to be this particular individual's problem and not a problem just in general with the regulations. So we'll work closely with your office to try to see if we can help get it straightened out.
That'd be great. Thank you.
Sure. Any other questions? Well, Ms. McCormick, do you have anything else for us?
No, not today. Thank you very much.
Well, thank you. Committee members, this Thursday, I think, Senator Dibble, you have committee time scheduled. Is it this Thursday?
Or is it this Thursday?
He's got to check.
All right.
Maybe next
Thursday.
Next
Thursday.
No, I think he's talking about a week from Thursday.
So, yeah.
Oh, okay, it's a week from Thursday.
Yeah. But, Mr. Chair, tomorrow night we're going down to Burnsville for the Transit mm-hmm. Subcommittee field hearing. Of course, everyone is welcome. I sincerely hope all the Transit Subcommittee members will make it down. But if you are coming down, we're going to head down on a bus and try to have some food for you and have a good time. So it'll be interesting. It's the first of a few of these field hearings that we're having in conjunction with the House.
Road trip. Maybe we should have the chief follow us along, make sure that everything goes off according
then,
to oil.
Then, of course, Mr. Chair, on Saturday, Senator Fischbach is going to host us up in her neck of the woods up in St. Cloud.
Great. All right. Well,
Senator
look forward
Olson
to
and
that.
I are carpooling up there.
we'll get a carpool up.
You don't let him drive.
Senator Skoy.
Mr. Chair and to Senator Dibble, I just want to tell you that you're going to drive by the sign in Rice that says extend North Star Corridor to Rice.
All right. I'll honk when I drive by.
Mr. Chair, he won't actually
get
that far, but I could give him a tour of it later if he wanted to see that.
I'll have my picture taken by it. We'll all crowd around it and have our picture taken.
All right. Well, look forward to it. We'll see you all next week, the same place. Thank you. Committee's adjourned.